Hey, this is Bill Minchin of Rev 7. Been a while since I said that. And as of now, you are listening to Power Rock Podcast with host Jim Madonna. The only Madonna I'm interested in dealing with.
Hey everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I would like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream. And friends, today I am super excited for today's guest, because I have on the line singer, songwriter, and guitarist of Rev 7, Mr. Bill Minchin. Bill, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bill, I got to tell you, man, it is a complete honor to have this opportunity to speak with you. You know, we did an interview a couple of years ago. It was awesome then. And, you know, I have seen such an amazing growth throughout your history of albums. Man, I just thank you so much. This new album here that you have out, Heaven, unbelievable album. Personally, I think it's one of your best, my opinion only.
Well, hey, Jim, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's my privilege to be able to represent the Lord and have a great time doing it, you know, playing loud, heavy music that I enjoy, doing it the way that I want it. And, you know, on this album, that included Robert Sweet, like a lot of my other albums, on the drums. And, of course, he does a blazing job all the time. But at this point in the game, this point in my life, I'm just, you know, thrilled to be able to put a record out like this again.
This record here, Rev 7, Heaven, 12, it's a 12-track CD. It's just been released. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners about that and where they can get the album?
Well, you can get it at BillMinchin.com. It's on eBay also. And you can download it pretty much almost everywhere. I've got it uploaded to all the places, iTunes, Amazon, all the rest of them. You know, it's a 12-song album. Rev 7 was a band I actually had formed in California in 1991. I moved to Las Vegas in 93, and there was still some, you know, the band was broke up, but there was still some bubbling about Rev 7, so I made kind of a budget recording in 94 and kind of let it go by the wayside for, you know, the band project there for a while, and we're playing in a band called Titanic for a couple of years, and that kind of split up, and I ended up making another album once I got a computer with recording software in 98. I did another one in 99. So there's your four Rev 7 albums in a nutshell. You know, the 91 intro debut album was, I had Robert pick each album. I think I picked the three off the first one, and I voted the other nine in. So there's actually some input from Robert on this album in a couple of different areas besides hitting the drums really hard.
Yeah, he's, you know, Robert is an incredible, hard-hitting drummer. I mean, plus he's entertaining to watch, you know what I'm saying, while he's performing. He's a great, great guy, and, you know, I would say that you couldn't have a better drummer on your album.
You know, that is absolutely true, and the funny thing is, without getting into too much technical lingo here, him and I have a very unusual chemistry together. You hear about, for musicians out there, you hear about drummers that play behind the beat. Really, it's a very microscopic amount. Some drummers, like the drummer for AC/DC, Phil Rudd's kind of famous for that. There were some other guys that did it good too, Cozy Powell. But Robert plays really kind of on top of the beat. That's where the guitar players usually like to play. But I'm kind of weird in that. I play just a hair behind the beat on my rhythm guitar a lot of the time. So that complements us, but we're kind of reverse chemistry of what most drummers and guitar players would prefer to have. You know, I grew up in the late 70s. A friend of mine in school, high school, had a double bass drum set. His parents had a new baby unexpectedly at that time of their life. He says, "Hey, can I put my drums in your house? Come over and play them every once in a while." I said, "Sure." You know, after I asked my parents, he never really came and played them. But I came home every day after school in high school, my senior year, played through side one of Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti. So I got a lot of John Bonham absorbed into my drumming, and I think it actually came out in my guitar playing. I seemed to really lay in it with that same kind of feel. And it, you know, Robert grew up in the 70s. We're the same age. You know, it's weird how our chemistries are formed that way. It's kind of a unique thing, and he really likes a lot of my guitar rhythms and everything, and he does stuff on my records that he doesn't do on anybody else's, and particularly Stryper's. Even he does a lot of different kind of playing on my records, and it gives people that like his playing, you know, a chance to see another side of him. And, you know, he does more than hit the drums hard. You know, he's really orchestrating. Sometimes he almost looks like a conductor in there, the way he's playing the drums. And sometimes he doesn't hit them that hard. In some of the places where he can fit some subtler things in, he does. And you know, and it's not uncommon when I do an album with him for me to actually change some of the music after he's done his drums and gone, because I see that he upped a certain section so good that I had to improve what I did in there to make it more cohesive, but just to make it better too.
Wow, that's cool, man. You know what, Bill? What I would like to do, we're going to go ahead and we're going to play some tracks off the album Heaven. The first song that I would like to talk about is Cast Down Crowns. Can you go ahead and give the listener some history about that song?
Yeah, that was on the debut album in 1991, and it was actually called Cast Down Satan at the time. I guess it's kind of a leftover thing from the 80s. A lot of 80s heavy metal bands had a lot of devil busting songs, you know, downing Satan and upping Christ. And I think I re-recorded all of the four albums when they came out on a small label in 2007, of Watergrave Records. I just re-recorded them because they were on so many formats and they wanted to put them out on two double album discs. It was volume two of Rev 7. I used a lot of different mediums for all of those albums. They kind of didn't fit together. And one of them was an irretrievable tape anyways. It couldn't be remixed and it was damaged. And so I re-recorded them all from the ground up, and they had a little bit of a different flavor. And I had modified the song title on Cast Down Crowns, what it's called now, to just Cast Down. And I made a few slight lyric adjustments. But on this album, there was a couple of songs. There was three tracks, actually, where I thought that just in the times that we're in, the way that I felt at this point in my life and just feeling where people are out there on social media and stuff, that changing it to Cast Down Crowns and the subject matter that I got going there, maybe would be more constructive and more uplifting for people and give people that are hurting a better feeling out there that believe in the Lord. And you know, the idea of casting down crowns, it's something that's in the Bible, talks about when all the believers are before the throne of Christ in heaven, eventually, all of us, that we'll be casting our crowns down at his feet. And
well, it's an amazing track. And I'm going to tell you what, brother, let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Cast Down Crowns with Bill Menchen on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up.
Praise the King, hand in hand.
All right, welcome back. We are with Bill Mention. And Bill, man, what an amazing song. Man, I don't want to sound robotic, but I'm going to tell you, I'll probably say that after every single track that we play. I love it. Just awesome stuff, brother.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
Bill, I got a question for you. What was that defining moment in your life that made you want to become a musician?
You know, it's funny you're asking me this. This was a few years before I became a Christian, actually. And, you know, I got saved in 1980, and I was at a friend's house across the street from my parents' house I was living in somewhere around 1975, maybe 76, and in Rialto, California. And I was in the guy's bedroom, and there was another guy from next door to his house. We were all listening to he was a big Aerosmith fan, and we were listening to either Aerosmith Rocks or Get Your Wings, I think. And it was one of the better tracks. And, you know, we weren't Christians, none of us in that room. And there was some herb being consumed and burned in the room. And we were all really into whatever song was playing. And we were just, you know, some people are just bobbing their heads, and we were playing a little air guitar here and there. And I don't even know where it came out of, but I just said something that fell flat on my two friends that were there. They just kind of rolled their eyes and went, oh, yeah, nice. Yeah, brilliant idea. You know, like not a million kids have said this, but I told them, you know what I'm going to do for a living someday, guys? And they said, what? And I just started playing air guitar to the song, and they just kind of rolled their eyes. And that was where, you know, and I was already a big Kiss fan, big Beatles fan, and all kinds of other 70s rock. And but for some reason, I don't know why, and I wasn't the biggest Aerosmith fan, although I liked those three albums there that I just named a lot, and I didn't have to buy them because I just go across the street and hear them anytime. But, you know, but that was just a moment where I just thought, hey, you know what? I should do this. I think I want to do this. I bet I can do this. Because I was already an accomplished musician on brass instruments in the public school system. And I knew I could pick up the guitar and do something with it. And I was already tinkering with it, but I didn't have the time to pursue it, pursuing trombone and bass trombone. Moment where I really thought, hey, I should do this. And that feeling didn't go away. And, you know, it wasn't until I was about just before my 18th birthday, I got out of high school, and I already decided I got to get a job as soon as possible. I'm going to keep living at home with my parents. I was a pretty good kid. I stayed out of trouble and stuff. You know, started buying, got my parents to co-sign on a half stack and a guitar so I could get some really good gear going. You know, and just started going on from there. And
well, that's awesome,
man. I guess it wasn't all total loss.
That's awesome. I appreciate that explanation. Hey, Bill, the next track I'd like to talk about is a song called Fire. Could you give the listeners some history about that song?
You know, that album, that song come off my second Rev 7 album. It's called Hell and Back. I just moved to Las Vegas. I didn't know anybody in town. Literally not one person. You know, I just spent a lot of nights just sitting home watching TV, but I've never been a TV watcher, and I started getting stir crazy, and I hadn't played the guitar for several months. And just out of boredom, I pulled it out one day and started playing it a little bit and kind of didn't feel nothing, you know, and I had a drum machine there at the time that had bass in it too. And I started tapping out a few beats and, you know, it took me about a month or so, maybe 2 months to really get back in the groove. And at some point I finally just got locked on and I started coming up with some rhythms and stuff. And I threw that album together. And one of the tracks was a song called Fire. It's another one of those songs where I have a lyric change in my history on that one. I converted the lyrics. I think I did that in 2007. Really changed it from being more of a song that was about hellfire to a song that's about holy fire and believers being supercharged with holy fire by the Holy Spirit. And so it's kind of a positive song in that sense. It's jumped up a little bit, and I think it came up. This is definitely the best version of this song that we've had too.
Absolutely killer tune. Here it is, Fire with Bill Mention on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up. again, we are back with Bill. And Bill, I'd like to add the riffs in it, man. You know, you always, you have a gift when it comes to that guitar. I can hear a lot of, you know, pitch changes in the way you play your guitar throughout this album. And through other albums, you know, like I stated before, this one to me seems just a little, you know, much more heavier, raw, powerful album. So, you know, again, great job.
Well, thanks a lot. I mean, I always kind of like to say a little bit to my own chagrin, it's too bad it took me 30 years to get good.
Next question I would like to ask, Bill, has there ever been a point in your life where you had lost the interest in playing? And if so, what did you do to rekindle your passion for it?
Well, you know, that one time there was one of them when I first moved to Vegas in the summer of early summer of 93. It was just a necessity there. I think I didn't have anything else to do. I didn't have a lot of money. So I just had to start playing. I mean, there was a guitar sitting in the garage, in the closet. So I pulled it out, and eventually it took a while to catch fire again. But I got to say, I've lost track of how many times that I have not touched the guitar for 6 months. And it's probably necessary because it's easy to get in a rut. It's easy to burn it out. I have as much passion for it now, if not more, than I ever did. And, you know, maybe that's, thank God I haven't had very little business success.
Right.
Sounds funny to say it that way, but, but you
funny.
Know, here I am at, here I am 57 making, you know, playing some of my more inspired playing than I've, ever done, even though I'm not playing as fast as I used to due to a lot of arthritis.
Bill, let me ask you this. In your opinion, what defines a successful record?
Well, I think first and foremost, the people that make it have to feel inspired. And they have to know it's good. Not because they have a certain producer or using a certain sample machine or a certain amp or a certain microphone. I mean, I think that doing what the industry wants you to do is one of the worst things that you can do. I think Joe Bonamassa said that to sound just like somebody else is death, because you're just going to die as an artist and people are, you know, you'll never have your own identity in it.
The next track I would like to talk about, which is personally my favorite song on this particular album, is called Power and Authority. How about some history on that one?
That's another one that had some lyric modifications. It used to be called Powers and Authorities. It was about demonic powers. I just thought, you know, I can almost leave, all I got to do is drop two S's from the title and it becomes a different song. And it's kind of about the second coming and leads up to that. The music is pretty much the same tracks that I had that redone in 2007. Much of this album is from that double set of compilations there, quadruple set actually. That's kind of where the lyrics are coming from. And it's, you know, it's more, if you're a believer, it's a very positive thing, the second coming, because that means all the evil is minutes away from ending permanently.
Right on, man. Well, here it is, man. Power and Authority on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up.
Old 1,000 years. expose. He set those captives free. All power and authority.
With Bill Mention. And Bill, you know, like I had stated before we played the song, man, incredible tune, well done, well produced, great stuff, brother.
Thank you, man. And Robert Sweet doesn't hurt one bit.
Right on, man, right on. Next question I'd like to ask you is, what piece of musical advice forever changed your way of thinking?
Boy, there's so many pieces of advice I've heard over the years. You know, there's been a few components. I remember back in the late 70s when I was learning how to play guitar, I was working a job, and I could buy almost an effect pedal a month. And I was trying out tons of really cool classic stuff, which some of it's been reissued since then. Tried using different pickups, tried getting different guitars, getting different amps. You know, it took a few years for me to be able to afford to own a few different amps. And got up in the 80s, and around 85, I started hearing about amp mods. Hey, somebody told me, hey, Bill, why don't you have your Marshall modded? Oh, you mean you can have it modified? Really? Yeah, I mean, that's the only way to make it sound good. You know, just, and how you capture the sound when you record it. And so I went through a lot of different phases and learned a lot of things over the years.
Was there, you may have been with a group of friends throughout your career, or earlier in your career, or wherever it may have been, and someone had said something to you that forever changed your way of thinking?
You know, there hasn't been one big giant thing that somebody said. There's just been I've always been kind of a loner. I kind of grew up out in the sticks, and that's a whole nother story about me. Just kind of an outsider to society. A lot of people try to say that, but not too many people actually really are. I'm actually kind of dysfunctional in a sense. I just have a hard time fitting in most places. But, you know, I just, I didn't talk to too many people. So it really, you know, one problem I had was learning, you know, we didn't have, like you have Guitar Center now, you can go in and buy a book by anybody. You know, you can, there's big 1-inch thick instructional books for Schenker and Page and Van Halen and all the top guys, Malmsteen, everything. I mean, I just couldn't find out what people are doing. You know, what kind of scales are they using? And my ear wasn't that well developed yet. I couldn't tell. I couldn't pick all the guitar notes out on an album. And a lot of times I was playing the wrong notes. But, you know, just a note here and a tip here and a tip there. Like the one guy that told me, hey, Bill, get your amp modded, you know. And that allowed me to tune my ear in to better stuff. And that's a lot of it is training your ear. You know, getting your ear tuned in where you can pick out the notes on a record. And really, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can play the guitar. There's a lot of different woods to use, there's different pickups, there's different amps, different styles of music, all that stuff. You know, it's up to the individual. You know, these days, I mean, young people really got it nice because they can, it's like a smorgasbord of history. They could buy an amp that sounds like anything and a guitar to play it with and buy the books and learn it. You know, and I was just making stuff up, and a lot of it sounded homemade in garages for a few years. And, I think it was somewhere around the mid 80s before I'd been playing the guitar probably 8 years by then or something. And I finally was starting to come into my own, maybe even 10 years before I really started to get to sound like something. And one of the problems was I was trying to copy all these 70s guitar players that I admired. By the time I got kind of decent at it, around 83, 84, 85. Then I hear all this new sound coming out. I'm like, oh, now I have to change everything I'm doing. Because here comes this 80s sound that was evolving, and it just broke out huge. And I basically had to throw most of what I knew in the trash can and start over again. You know, now, at the point where I'm at now, I've got a large repertoire of, you know, decades that I've been playing the guitar, you know, kind of mostly over, you know, close to four decades, and a little bit more, but like four whole decades that I've seen music come and go. And now I just don't worry about anything. I just play whatever I feel like doing, you know, and so I'm kind of relaxed at it now.
Next track I'd like to talk about is called Sabbath Breaker. How about some history?
Well, that was on my second album, Hell and Back. And, of course, the Sabbath breaker is Jesus. And I mean that tongue-in-cheek. He wasn't really breaking it, but they thought he was. And I use a couple of – the chorus has a quote from Paul the Apostle in there, and a lot of the verses are just stuff, the lyrics I gleaned out of some of the things that Jesus, the scuffles he got into with the Pharisees and stuff. And it's a little bit sarcastic. I almost get a little salty in there in my attitude. I'm just kind of sticking up for the Lord, saying, hey, you guys need to get off his back, you know, kind of thing. But not that he needs me standing up for
it. Right.
In kind of a rebellious rock and roll sense. I was trying to make it sound like a rock song, I guess. But I kind of had fun with it. There's some twists and things like that with the lyrics.
Right on. Well, I'm going to tell you what, Bill. Let's go ahead and let the listeners hear Sabbath Breaker on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up.
Raising the dead, I know you heard what I said. Don't
again. We are back with Bill Menchen. And Bill, what we're going to do is we are going to go ahead and close the show out. But I'd like to ask you one more question. What type of legacy would you like to leave to your friends, family, and fans when you go home to be with the Lord?
Boy, that's a tough one. You know, I guess I'm at that part of life too. You know, I'm pretty late in my career and everything, and late and getting later in life. I mean, some people think I'm only 57, but me, it feels old. I lived a physical life, kind of beat up. Pretty full life though, man. I can't complain in general, but as far as my music concerned, you know, I guess my first priority was, you know, I kind of pushed all my chips to the center of the table when it come to lifting up the name of the Lord. And especially after a few years, you know, I thought, man, it's going to be almost impossible to make it big. So many things will have to happen just right. And nobody from the Inland Empire as a band ever made it. That's the San Bernardino Riverside area that never made it big. Sammy Hagar lived in Fontana for a while, but he's an individual and he moved to San Francisco to join Montrose. So that's different. You know, a homegrown act like Stryper and all those other guys, they were all out in L.A. where all the clubs were and everything. And I wasn't going to move out there. I was kind of a homer. And I kind of knew that I wasn't going to make it big. You know, I just thought, you know, the odds are against it too far. I can't concern myself. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to put all my chips on 7 Red, to use an analogy. And I'm just betting everything on the Lord. And I'm just going to relax and try to make good music. And I hope people saw that my music got better and more seasoned as I went along. And, you know, and a lot of it is this. I wanted it to be a useful product. If the lyrics mean anything to anybody and it helps them or builds them up. I was really trying to build up believers. It's kind of evangelical, but really more than anything, I was trying to edify people and make them feel better about what they already believe while having a particular sound that they enjoy. So, you know, just hoping it was a useful thing that I did and that people got off on it for the right reasons.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, that was a great answer. And Bill, what we're going to do, man, is we're going to close it out now. And I want to say to you that, Bill, I truly wish you the utmost success in all that you do. And I ask God to continue to bless you in your music career, in your family life, in your health. And I pray that just God watches over you, watches over your family, and that he just continues to pour out the blessing that he promises to do. And I thank you so much. Thank you, brother.
You know, and again, Jim, it's my privilege. Really, it is. I feel fortunate to be here at this point in time in my life and to be on your show. And as to have anybody want to talk to me, it's, you know, some people look at me as an old washed-up has-been, but I don't know. These days, I guess classic is kind of cool, but, you know, again, I just, I'm thankful that anybody's listening and that, you know, what I did was worthwhile.
Amen, my friend. All right. Well, there you have it, an interview with Bill Menchen of Rev 7. I am Jim Madonna, your host. What we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and close this show out with one more song. This one here is called Who Is to Come. Peace.
Is the Lord Almighty, holy, holy is he, who was and is and Lord Almighty.